Hello, this is Tyler McVeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, March 21st, 2025. We begin our reading on the front page. Lincoln's Challenge Academy: five cadets facing charges in wake of melee. Pair of 18-year-olds charged as adults. Other three charged as juveniles. By Dave Hinton, out of Rantoul. Five Lincoln's Challenge cadets remained in custody Thursday morning following a melee Wednesday evening involving 70 to 80 cadets that saw officers from multiple agencies called in to assist Rantoul police. Michael McKay, 18, of Zion, and Anthony Williams, 18, of Peoria, were both charged as adults with aggravated battery and mob action. McKay was also charged with criminal damage to state-supported property for allegedly damaging a police squad car. Both are being held at the Champaign County Jail. Three others were detained as juveniles on charges of aggravated battery and mob action. Their names were not released. Rantoul Police Chief Tony Brown said the fight began in the academy's cafeteria, and it took more than an hour to restore quiet. Rantoul officers responded shortly after 6 p.m. and immediately requested assistance due to the size of the fight. We detained probably about 7 to 8 people, and a couple of them went to the hospital complaining about different injuries, Brown said. He said there has been ongoing tension between different groups of cadets, and it boiled over. Authorities from the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, as well as the Champaign, Thomas Borough, Mahomet, Tolono, University of Illinois, and Urbana police departments, assisted Rantoul officers. Dozens of police cars ringed the academy just off US 45 on the village's southeast side. In addition to police, Rantoul Fire Department emergency medical personnel and several ambulances responded. No police officers or other emergency personnel were injured, Brown said. He said this isn't the first time Rantoul police have had to respond to fights at the academy that required calling in additional departments. This fight, however, was the largest he has seen there. Lincoln's Challenge is operated by the Illinois National Guard. In a statement Wednesday night, Guard spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Brad Layton said, "Our focus is on the safety and security of the cadets and informing their parents or guardians." Next story is out of the University of Illinois. Honorary degrees on hold after cons voted down, by Luke Taylor, out of Urbana. Months after the Faculty Senate voted down an honorary degree for Flex and Gate founder Shahid Khan, the University of Illinois is reviewing its process for granting such honors. In December, the UI Senate voted 75-37 with 20 abstentions to reject a recommendation to grant an honorary degree to the Urbana billionaire who came to the U of I from Pakistan to earn a bachelor's degree in industrial engineering in 1971. Those who voted against the recommendation cited labor complaints made some time ago at a local Flex and Gate plant. The decision drew criticism from several UI leaders, including President Tim Killeen and Chancellor Robert Jones. At the time, Don Edwards, then board of the UI Board of Trustees, said an examination of university statutes and Senate policies was warranted, and trustees gave Killeen a March 30 deadline to report back with recommendations. Killeen made such a report during Thursday's board meeting, saying that each university within the UI system is working on a review of its selection process because each has a different approach. Chancellor Jones has put the awarding of honorary degrees out of Champaign-Urbana on hold while the process now underway at his university plays out. UI spokeswoman Robin Kaller said that Jones is working with the Senate to find ways to allow potential honorees to be considered in confidence. "We don't want to expose people we are hoping to honor to public conversations about them, but we must follow all relevant regulations." The next story is on the front page. Illini in the NCAA tournament. They're fired up. At the arena on eve of tournament, the Illini spirit runs deep. Story by Joey Wright, out of Milwaukee. Bruce and Lori Nixon picked the right time to attend the University of Illinois. The couple, Bruce hails from Clinton while Lori is from Aurora, were season ticket holders when the likes of Kenny Battle, Kendall Gill, and Stephen Bardo guided Illinois to the Final Four in 1989. "The Illini spirit runs deep," Bruce Nixon said. "It was just a heck of a year. We're proud of being Illinois alumni and being part of that experience. We're hoping to see this year's team put it together just like they did." Some 36 years later, they were among the very first to arrive at Fiserv Forum on Thursday, well before Kasparis Giussionis, Moriz Johnson Jr., and Kylan Boswell took the floor for an open practice ahead of the NCAA tournament. "We just want to see the Illini Nation come out in strong numbers," Bruce Nixon said. "Let's have fun. Let's take this thing all the way out of Milwaukee," he said. The couple is now retired and residing in northern Wisconsin. They have a daughter who attended the University of Kentucky. It could be a house divided if the Illini and Wildcats advance to face each other in the second round. So it worked out that the Illini got the nod to open the tournament close to home. On the way back home, in fact, from visiting family in Illinois earlier this week. "We were thinking we were either going to go to Milwaukee or Lexington if the Illini went," Bruce Nixon said. "So this just matched up perfect. We're really happy with the mix of teams that have gone here also." Whether the Nixons are pitted against each other is dependent on Friday's results. Illinois' tournament opener against Xavier is slated for 8:45 p.m., immediately following Kentucky's tilt with Troy. Either way, count the Nixons as fans of what Brad Underwood has done with the Illini since taking the helm of the program in 2017. "He has done a great job of getting some great talent," Bruce Nixon said. "We're actually thinking that this might have to be an annual occasion for March Madness. Now that we're retired, we'd like to follow them around and get to see more of these tournaments." Bloomington native Cameron Bowers, also among the smattering of Illini fans in Fiserv Forum's lower bowl Thursday, shares the sentiment. "I'm a big fan," Bowers said. "We've gone from a program that was in obscurity in the Big Ten to not having to worry about our name being called on Selection Sunday. I think that's a huge thing." Credit Bowers' grandfather, Rantoul's Bill Schaffner, with inspiring the Milwaukee residents' Illini fandom. Bowers, a bartender in nearby Shorewood, Wisconsin, spots orange and blue where he can in the heart of Badger Country, where he's lived since 2016. "That was destined before I was born," Bowers said. "My grandpa has been a donor and season ticket holder for years and years and years. I was so happy come Selection Sunday to be able to just come down the street and go watch the boys." He'll attend Friday's game with a few pals, one from England, another who graduated from Northwestern, and fittingly, a Xavier grad. Maggie Bartoletti was wearing her school's navy blue and white as they watched the Illini make their final preparations, complete with cheerleaders and a 40-piece basketball band watching from the baseline. "There's a good little fun rivalry with some friends up here," Bowers said. "You see a lot more orange and blue than you'd think up here, even outside of tournament time. I have a couple regulars who graduated from U of I and live here now who are big-time Illinois fans." And then there's accompanying pictures of some pep band members shouting and looking excited. And then some other pictures of fans courtside. Moving over to national and world news, story called Privacy Protections. Judge blocks Doge fishing expedition at Social Security. Ruling, hunting for fraud, not valid reason to flout law. Out of the Washington AP. A federal judge on Thursday temporarily blocked billionaire Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency from Social Security systems that hold personal data on millions of Americans, calling their work there a fishing expedition. The order also requires the team to delete any personally identifiable data in their possession. U.S. District Judge Ellen Hollander in Maryland found that the team got broad access to sensitive information at the Social Security Administration to search for fraud with little justification. The DOJ team is essentially engaged in a fishing expedition at SSA in search of a fraud epidemic based on little more than suspicion, she wrote. The order does allow DOJ staffers to access to data that's been redacted or stripped of anything personally identifiable if they undergo training and background checks. To be sure, rooting out possible fraud, waste, and mismanagement in the SSA is in the public interest, but that does not mean that the government can flout the law to do so, Hollander wrote. The Trump administration says DOGE is targeting waste in the federal government. Musk has been focused on Social Security as an alleged hotbed of fraud, describing it as a Ponzi scheme, and insisting that reducing waste in the program is an important way to cut government spending. The ruling, which could be challenged on appeal, comes in a lawsuit filed by labor unions, retirees, and the advocacy group Democracy Forward. They argued that DOGE access violates privacy laws and presents serious information security risks. The lawsuit included a declaration from a recently departed Social Security official who saw the DOGE team sweep into the agency, said she is deeply worried about sensitive information being exposed. The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment. DOGE detailed a 10-person team of federal employees at the SSA, seven of whom were granted read-only access to agency systems or personally identifiable information, according to court documents. The staffers were all federal employees allowed to access the data under federal privacy laws, the government argued, and there's no evidence that any personal data was improperly shared. The Justice Department also said that DOGE access doesn't deviate significantly from normal practices inside the agency, where employees are routinely allowed to search its databases. But attorneys for the plaintiffs called the access unprecedented. High-risk tourist: Taliban releases abducted American. Story out of Washington, the AP. An American man who was abducted more than 2 years ago while traveling through Afghanistan as a tourist has been released by the Taliban in a deal with the Trump administration that Qatari negotiators helped broker, the State Department said Thursday. George Glezman, an airline mechanic from Atlanta, is the third American detainee to be released by the Taliban since January. He was seized by the Taliban's intelligence services in December 2022 and was designated by the U.S. government as wrongfully detained the following year. In a statement, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Glezman was on his way back to the United States to be reunited with his wife, Alexandra, and praised Qatar for steadfast commitment and diplomatic efforts that he said were instrumental in securing George's release. George's release is a positive and constructive step, Rubio said. It is also a reminder that other Americans are still detained in Afghanistan. President Trump will continue his tireless work to free all Americans unjustly detained around the world. Glezman was being accompanied back to the U.S. through Qatar's capital, Doha, by Adam Baylor, who has been handling hostage issues for the Trump administration. The Taliban disclosed earlier Thursday that Baylor had met with a delegation that included Afghan Foreign Minister Amir Khan Muttaqi. Glezman, 66, was in Afghanistan as a tourist at the time of his abduction and has visited more than 100 countries as part of his passion for exploring different cultures, according to a profile on the website of the Foley Foundation, an organization that advocates for the release of Americans detained by foreign countries. The release of Glezman is part of what the Taliban has previously described as the normalization of ties between the U.S. and Afghanistan. Next story: Gaza Strip, at least 85 dead in Israeli strikes. Deir al-Balah, Gaza Strip, by the AP. Israeli strikes killed at least 85 Palestinians across the Gaza Strip overnight into Thursday, according to local health officials. Hours later, Hamas fired three rockets at Israel without causing casualties, in the first such attack since Israel broke their ceasefire. Israel resumed heavy strikes across Gaza on Tuesday, shattering the truce that had facilitated the release of more than two dozen hostages and brought relative calm since late January. Israeli bombardments in the past 3 days have killed at least 592 people, said Zaher Al-Wahedi, the head of the records department at the Gaza Health Ministry. The Israeli military said it was again enforcing a blockade in northern Gaza, including Gaza City. Palestinians were not being ordered to leave northern Gaza, but can no longer enter, the military said, and are only allowed to move south on foot using the coastal road. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians had returned to what remains of their homes in the north during the ceasefire. Next story begins the Trump administration, an end to education. President signs executive order to begin dismantling department, though it'll require Congress's acquiescence. Story out of Washington and the AP. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Thursday calling for the dismantling of the U.S. Education Department, advancing a campaign promise to take part an agency that's been a longtime target of conservatives. Trump has derided the Education Department as wasteful and polluted by liberal ideology. However, completing its dismantling is most likely impossible without an act of Congress, which created the department in 1979. Republicans said they will introduce legislation to achieve that, while Democrats have quickly lined up to oppose the idea. The order says the education secretary will, to the maximum extent appropriate and permitted by law, take all necessary steps to facilitate the closure of the Department of Education and return authority over education to the states and local communities. It offers no detail on how that work will be carried out or where it will be targeted, though the White House said the agency will retain certain critical functions. Trump said his administration will close the department beyond its core necessities, preserving its responsibilities for Title I funding for low-income schools, Pell Grants, and money for children with disabilities. The White House said earlier Thursday that the department will continue to manage federal student loans, but the order appears to say the opposite. It says the Education Department doesn't have the staff to oversee its $1.6 trillion loan portfolio and must return bank functions to an entity equipped to serve America's students. At a signing ceremony, Trump blamed the department for America's lagging academic performance and said states will do a better job. It's doing us no good, he said. Already, Trump's Republican administration has been gutting the agency. Its workforce is being slashed in half, and there have been deep cuts to the Office for Civil Rights and the Institute of Education Sciences, which gathers data on the nation's academic progress. Education Secretary Linda McMahon said she will remove red tape and empower states to decide what's best for their schools, but she promised to continue essential services and work with states and Congress to ensure a lawful and orderly transition. The measure was celebrated by groups that have long called for an end to the department. For decades, it has funneled billions of taxpayer dollars into a failing system, one that prioritizes leftist indoctrination over academic excellence, all while student achievement stagnates and America falls further behind, said Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation. Advocates for public schools said eliminating the department would leave children behind in an American education system that is fundamentally unequal. This is a dark day for the millions of American children who depend on federal funding for a quality education, including those in poor and rural communities with parents who voted for Trump, NAACP President Derek Johnson said. Opponents are already gearing up for legal challenges, including Democracy Forward, a public interest litigation group, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, called the order a tyrannical power grab and one of the most destructive and devastating steps Donald Trump has ever taken. Margaret Spelling, who served as Education Secretary under Republican President George W. Bush, questioned whether the department will be able to accomplish its remaining missions and whether it will ultimately improve schools. Will it distract us from the ability to focus urgently on student achievement, or will people be figuring out how to run the train? She asked. Spelling said schools have always been run by local and state officials, and rejected the idea that the Education Department and the federal government have been holding them back. Currently, much of the agency's work revolves around managing money, both its extensive student loan portfolio and a range of aid programs for colleges and school districts, like school meals and support for homeless students. The agency also is key in overseeing civil rights enforcement. Next story is titled Nutrien Ag Solutions in the Research Field. Company unveils latest innovation farm focused on equipment, products, practices in rural Tolono. Story by Dave Hinton out of Tolono. The research field is an ever-changing one when it comes to agriculture. The speed of change was evident at an open house ribbon-cutting ceremony Thursday at the Nutrien Ag Solutions Innovation Farm. The rural Tolono site is the fourth innovation farm owned by the company. Its focus centers primarily on equipment, products, and practices, and has the largest anchor on machine-enabled agronomy of all the farms. When you're talking about equipment now, you're talking more than tillage, said Jeff Tarsi, Nutrien Executive Vice President and President of Global Retail. You're talking about data collection, data simulation, how you compile data. The equipment side of things is playing a much larger role. One innovative aspect of the research farm is Nutrien-employed staff who focus on the weather. Champaign native Matt Reardon, a Nutrien atmospheric scientist, said the rural Tolono location is ideal to keep an eye on the sky with its 10-mile view in every direction. The facility is equipped with its own weather studio with microphones, green screen, and television to help get forecasts and conditions that growers are looking for. We can produce it right here on our innovation farm and publish it to our social media out to our partners, Reardon said. To educate farmers, he said, it's important to establish weather trends in the Midwest and North America as a whole. Reardon said weather information is provided on YouTube as well. Other forecasts from Nutrien are available to farmers by calling their local crop consultant. Reardon said more farmers in the last 5 to 10 years have started to ask for information on the weather in other parts of the world, South America, Australia, Europe, and Asia. What I'm most excited about for our growers is being able to invite some of our agronomists, some of those top crop consultants, some of our grower partners into the studio, Reardon said. We want to share what we are seeing because that's how we all learn. Thaddeus Bates, Senior Manager of Applied Agronomy, said the goal is to grow ag as a whole. We want to look at the pieces, production, practices, and people, and combine everything to provide the best solutions, Bates said. Tarsi said Nutrien is a global company, but wants to be involved on a local basis as well. We're generally the first ones on the ground in the case of disasters to make contributions, he said. We just had one last week in Argentina, where they had massive flooding. Nutrien's Kent McDaniel said there had already been several internal events held at the new site, with seed specialists and a drone exercise, and noted similar events could be incorporated to include the local community. I think the whole idea about community, we could do this technology innovation anywhere, but you get the most value out of it when you're in the same locations as where your products are going to actually provide value, McDaniel said. Paul Bonnet, Senior Director of Agronomy and Environmental Sciences, said all of the field equipment used at the research facility is the same as that used by area farmers. All of the trials and all the information can be replicated by our farmer customers, Bonnet said. We call this research at the speed of farming. It's our ability to do replications, to fiscally sound experiments on real farms and in real farm environments to collect the data and allow our growers to replicate it on their own farms. Tarsi said agriculture is in a down cycle, fiscally, at present. Nailing these solutions is even more critical today than it ever has been for our growers, he said. Bates said he would like to get area schools to visit the innovation farm. So many of our kids today, even though they grow up in a large agricultural area, they don't understand where their food source comes from, where their clothes come from, he said, noting the Corn Growers Association and Soybean Growers Association have been invited to hold meetings at the site. The farm includes 250 tillable acres that are evenly rotated between corn and soybeans. The Innovation Farm works closely with Loveland Products and DynaGrow Seed. And then there's also an accompanying picture of a bunch of men standing next to a building. Next story, Champaign County Court. Judge, Suey Brothers to remain closed while appeal ongoing. He says business has a point about refrigeration issues. Story by Jana Wiersema out of Champaign. Suey Brothers barbecue joint will remain closed for the time being as the restaurant continues to appeal a red placard from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. Champaign County Judge Jason Baum has granted the health district's request for a preliminary injunction to keep the eatery closed as it continues going through the administrative process. A follow-up hearing is set for April 3rd. However, he said the business raises some valid points on the substantive decision of refrigeration, and the injunction should not last longer than is absolutely necessary. Injunctions are extraordinary remedies, Baum said at a hearing Thursday morning. They are designed to be temporary in order to allow an underlying problem to be addressed and fixed. I'm also sensitive that this temporary solution is closing a business and hindering the livelihood of both co-owner Alvin Allison and his employees, and that is not my goal. Suey Brothers initially refused to close after receiving a red placard on February 27th from the Health District, which cited a lack of refrigeration due to the restaurant's walk-in cooler not being in operation. Allison and co-owner Isis Griffin have claimed that the order is unfair and that their commercial refrigerator exceeds the necessary requirements for reducing temperatures. The restaurant shut its doors last week after Baum approved the health district's request for a temporary restraining order. He said at the time that it was not the court's place to decide whether the health district's decision to issue a red placard was correct until after Suey Brothers went through the proper administrative appeal process with the health district. Assistant State's Attorney Andrew Muller said Thursday that the health district found in a recent administrative hearing that Suey Brothers remains out of compliance. However, the restaurant can appeal that finding to the Board of Health, and Allison has indicated he plans to go this route. Muller said this is the final step in the administrative process before the court would have jurisdiction over the health district's decision. Bohm agreed and set the April 3rd hearing as a time to check in on the appeal. However, he added that if the health district's decision to give Suey Brothers a red placard eventually comes before the court, the burden would likely be on the district to prove that the restaurant's equipment is insufficient to meet the necessary standards. Muller said earlier in the hearing that the health district has the authority to administer the terms of health permits for restaurants, and new equipment has to be reviewed and authorized by the district. Mr. Allison operates a business with a high volume of meat products that require rapid cooling, Muller said, adding that the restaurant was authorized for a walk-in cooler as part of its permit. He added that health district officials have evaluated Suey Brothers' commercial refrigerator and contacted the manufacturer, who informed them that it is designed for standard refrigeration and not rapid cooling. Allison retorted that this depends on how much food needs to be cooled, and said if Sui Brothers was cooling 5 or 10 cases of meat at a time, this refrigerator wouldn't meet the standards for rapid cooling. The restaurant worked with large volumes when it first opened. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of our News Gazette, dated March 21st, 2025.